thanks very, very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal. Dane is filling in for Wendy. A couple of changes in today's lineup. Dane in for Wendy. And then when you call us at 312-981-7200, Ashley will be our producer today. So she's filling in also.
We're in some good hands.
I like to think so.
Yeah.
Ashley's your producer on the weekends,
sure.
Is she not?
Yeah. Yeah, she's awesome. So we're in good shape.
Can I tell you the biggest difference, Dane, between when you're here and when Wendy's here?
Okay. So
Do you already know what it is?
Well, I'm going to lay some ground rules here outside of the obvious visual differences. Because as much... or as many times as I've stopped on the street and say, hey, are you Wendy?
You look a little like Wendy.
It doesn't happen as often as you might think.
Yeah.
And so outside of the physical similarities,
yes,
or visual,
yes,
outside of that, what is it?
The biggest difference is you're very, like, you want to know. You said to me, what will we be discussing at the beginning of the show? And Wendy and I, for some reason, we just don't know. I know that seems irresponsible, but no. Like on any given day at the beginning of the show, there's always a bunch of things that are kind of in our heads of, you know, we might discuss them at the beginning or at some point during the show. But I like that you're so regimented that you say,
oh,
hey, we're going into the studio. It's game time. How will the show begin?
I don't know if it's regimented, but just, you know, I want to be as prepared to support as possible. But I think it's a testament to you and Wendy, the connection that you guys have and have had, that you don't need to do that, right? It's like a stream of, you know,
right,
like a mind meld. And you know that when, you know, when it's time to talk, you know, you're not only going to have conversations thinking about, but that Chicago's been thinking about.
Yes. I hope you're right. Look at my fingers. They're all
right.
Everything's crossed.
Yes.
I hope you're right. Steve actually inspired me with something that we should discuss.
Well, that's not new, is it?
No, that happens on a daily basis, Steve. I didn't mean to say, hey, for the first time ever.
Jumped right in. Hey, wait a minute.
Right. Steve and I, we have a morning briefing session of some things, some ideas for the show.
Would that be regimented and prepared?
Slightly.
Let's just say Bill and I talk more about the show upcoming than Wendy.
Yes. Okay, gotcha. Yes. And Steve, today you brought something up that I would love to do as a segment, and it's words that British people say that I like. How did this begin? I don't remember.
We were talking about something big, like a whole wide world or something, and
yeah.
I love the world. The
oh, that British people, when they say the word world, they say it with a British tinge to it, of world.
It's like an O, a longer O, world.
Did you just see this recently? Did it just register recently for you?
You know, I see it. I watch a lot of British TV. So,
do you?
I really do. Yeah, I watch Collateral, that series on Netflix. I just finished.
Oh, yeah.
Great show. And Fleabag, we talk about.
Yep. Yep.
But when they say world.
Actually, the one that inspires me the most is one that's fresh out of Fleabag. Do you watch this show, by the way, Dane?
Yeah, okay. So get this. And this is the impact that you can have. So I was not familiar with the show Fleabag, and the name is a little off-putting just in general,
yeah,
right? You think of the typical historical context of a Fleabag.
It's not pleasant.
Right. It isn't like, come watch me, I'm enticing, right?
Yeah.
And you guys talked about it, about how this was a show that was coming on, and we had, you know, our guy that kind of, you know, has his hand on the pulse of the TV world.
Alexander Zalbin.
Yes, Steve,
yep.
Steve had talked a little bit about he'd seen it, how great it was, and I ended up watching like quite a few. It's really, well, I mean, I'm not the only one. I'm late to the hey, it's awesome party because they just took away, I think, 3 Emmys, but it's really great.
Yeah, it's really good.
It is great.
But the word that is said on that show, and I've heard other British people say it, and every time they say it, I say, boy, they've classed up a word that we just throw away here in America, is, you know how when you're at a loss for words, you just, the word comes up? You go, and then, you know, that's just the way we speak for the most part. In Great Britain, instead of saying U-M, they say im, I am. I don't know why, but they do. And it sounds better for some reason. But if you try that here in the States, if you're at a loss for words and you say im, people go, did you just say im? Why did you say im? What's wrong with you? So I'm only going to do it when I'm in England. I'm not going to do it here at all.
Well, you could class up the, you know, show a little bit.
No, people won't know
subtle.
What to do with it.
I think it'd be like, hey, you know what? The show just seems elevated.
Did either of you see the other day on Stephen Colbert, he had Paul McCartney on for the entire hour? Did either of you see this?
I did not, but I know you recorded it.
I did. I recorded it and I watched it, and it was so great. And I kept thinking, you know how they've got that option now where on your GPS system, you'll be able to plug in celebrities. Samuel Jackson. They just announced Samuel Jackson will be the first one.
You mean different voices?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you know how you're driving around and your car tells you to turn left?
A friend of mine mentioned that Snoop Dogg is an option.
That's one.
Yep.
Yeah, right. There's a short list of names that they've already released. Samuel Jackson was the first name, who seems too angry to me to be giving out directions when on a trip. But as I was watching Paul McCartney the other day, I thought to myself, what would be more pleasant if you were looking for a route than having Paul McCartney explain to you when to turn and when not to turn?
I would love to listen to him.
Wouldn't that be great, Mary? That'd be fantastic.
Turn left to the loo.
Now, do they do that? This is just a little enhancement.
Did you say left to the loo?
Left to the loo. That was almost like a British square dance move.
Well, guys, think about this. For those people out there that don't just have a voice to tell you, like, left or right, and oftentimes, if you're on a straightaway, the GPS person isn't talking to you the whole time. So maybe he could intersperse between turns. Let's say there's a 10-mile stretch with a nice little story about, you're like, this is when we wrote Penny Lane.
Right. You know, just little inside factoids about the Beatles while you were traveling.
Do these guys really need the money, though? I mean, come on.
No,
the answer is
no.
Money from voiceover artists.
I know. But think about the hours that would be spent if you get a star of that magnitude. If you get Paul McCartney or Samuel Jackson, they have to go into a studio and record tons and tons of hours
of
time.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if they'd be willing to do that.
Who would you get, Mary? Is there somebody you would definitely get?
I don't know. I got to think about that.
A guy or a girl.
Okay. Well, yeah. I have to think about it.
My phone, I think everybody's phone has this option, but you know how you can get your phone to tell you stuff?
Sure.
Right.
like the internet?
Yeah, the internet also has that option. So you know how your phone will tell, like you can tell your phone, you know, wake me up at 7 a.m. And then your phone will go, 7 a.m. wake up, recorded, you know, like that.
Oh, nice.
Right. So my phone, and I think everybody's phone does this, has the option you can do it with an American accent, an Australian accent, or a British accent. And for some reason, I went with the British one, and for some reason, everything just seems more official.
Well, it feels like you have a butler.
Yes, you know, that's like, so true. That's so true.
Do you feel like you're being scolded?
There's an element to that.
Right. I can't do a British accent.
But they should have that as an option where it's more forceful.
Yeah.
Just to let you know they're not kidding around. You have to do what they tell you to do.
We missed a couple turns in a place that we were going last night. And maybe, I think maybe to inspire you to become a better driver or to maybe put some things in. Maybe if you miss your turn and you know how it says recalculating.
Yes.
Maybe there's like a sort of a, I don't know, like a disappointed sigh. Like, recalculating, you know, like you missed your turn, you know?
Well, then they should have your parents record it. They should have your mom and dad. What are you doing? We've told you don't turn left on. What are you doing? That would be like a constant reminder that your parents love you while you're driving.
Maybe that you probably could you do that, like have your
you'd have to record so many hours of options, wouldn't
you? Roger Ebert were later in life when he didn't have the ability to actually use his voice, but they had so much audio of him talking that they were able to kind of create a keyboard. So when he typed things, it would actually say it in his voice.
Is that true?
It's true.
I didn't know that. That's brilliant. Why didn't Stephen Hawking use that same option then?
Maybe Stephen Hawking, because he kind of, you probably have Stephen Hawking tell you the directions.
Well,
you
know, his was very robotic sounding.
His sounded like the stock one that you just get, you know, kind of the picture of the sunset and the beach with your phone.
Yes. Yeah,
that's basically.
I wonder why they didn't do that for him.
Well, because
maybe there wasn't enough, maybe because of the time element, there wasn't enough.
What would you have Stephen Hawking sound like?
I don't know. Well, whatever his regular voice had sounded like. Didn't they have the technology? I guess they didn't have the technology back then, too.
Well, but I think you just didn't. This is an opportunity to choose something different. If maybe you didn't, we don't all have Dave Schwann's voice.
Right. No, that's true. That's true.
Or David Jennings or something. So maybe you choose. You have the voice you've always dreamed of.
That's a great idea. Yeah. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We've got all kinds of things to discuss with you. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. It's Bill and Dane and Fuendi on WGN. Thanks, Dane. It's Bill F. and it's Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy. Wendy will return on Monday. It's hard to believe, if you heard the promo I just read, or if you're listening to Steve's show, they discussed this a little bit this morning, that for those of us that grew up in Chicago, it just made sense if you turned your dial toward Channel 9 on a summer day, you were going to see a Cubs game, and all that comes to a close tonight when the Cubs and the Cardinals play. Isn't that hard to believe?
It's the kind of thing you're going to have to explain to your kids, you know, that isn't like a, you know, just like, hey, where did all the Blockbusters go? Or the phone used to be connected to the house. Is that it used to really honestly be the soundtrack of the summer. You know, we always had WGN on throughout the summer, and you'd always have baseball, and you'd always have the Cubs,
It's strange to me also, at the end of a Cubs game, when they play Go Cubs Go, they play the Steve Goodman anthem, Go Cubs Go.
Are they going to change it?
Well, we haven't had the Cubs on our airwaves here on the radio. It's still remained on television, but it's always strange when they get to that part of the song and they say, listening on WGN, and then you go, not really. You know what I mean? It's off. It's not correct.
So what do you keep it as part of a, you know, an undeniable history, right? That
right.
I think a lot of people have yeah. to recognize and are proud of and appreciate, or do you want the next generation of Cubs fans singing that song maybe not as often as they want, right?
I don't
know. In a season like this year.
But I like that we're still getting a plug even though we're not running the games. I think that's funny.
Well, that they're right, okay. So you have that. So, yeah. So from a selfish perspective maybe, but do you think you want, you know, the next generation going like, "What does it mean?"
I know.
Why did we say that?
But it was so automatic for us.
Or is there a sponsorship deal somewhere where it's like, right. See the Cubs on Marquee Network?
Right, right. It would just be some disembodiced voice that doesn't fit in at all saying
sliced
it.
In, you know.
It was, you know, it was always such a given if the Cubs were on, they were on with us. They were on WGN Radio and on WGN TV. And now on TV, it's a scramble if you're looking for the Cubs. Because sometimes they were on Channel 9, sometimes Channel 7, sometimes Channel 12, sometimes on Sports Network.
Yep.
You really had to search around. And I guess next season they're starting this thing where it's a subscription series where you pay by the pitch. You have a box in front of you.
What?
And on every pitch, you have to pay.
So at the bottom of the fourth, when they're down by 10, you can
yes.
you can cut it loose?
So when they call it extra innings, it really...
Yes. It will cost you extra to watch those innings, Steve.
No, that's... Is that serious, Bill?
I don't know.
Okay.
Probably. Could be, might be. I don't know.
It's a good idea. Well... I don't know. It's a good. I think after the fourth inning, you can't cancel or something, right?
Right.
We're a few minutes into the movie, you used to be able to, like, okay, I don't want to watch it.
Right. Right. So it'll be a very different baseball landscape starting next season. We'll see what happens. But I do know they were talking about this again on Steve's show a little bit. There will be some tributes to the history of those two entities existing together. The Cubs and Channel 9, and they will play them throughout the game tonight. So if you're around your TV, turn on Channel 9 tonight, watch the Cubs battle it out with the Cardinals, and see these tributes that have been going on for decades of great Cub games that have run on our station.
In general, Bill, what are your thoughts on that? You're a historian in a lot of different areas and certainly a sports fan. Your family had tickets, season tickets, to both the White Sox and the Cubs.
We did.
As a kid, and you wonder... Like what the value of all of that tradition is as far as keeping the connection with the fan base, because people have said, now granted, you're trading a lot for winning.
Yes.
Right. So to bring a World Series and a competitive
yeah.
team, people would have said like, we'll sell our soul, whatever it is.
Right.
But the neighborhood has totally changed.
Sure.
I think the price points and demographics have adjusted to,
yeah.
to compare to some story. It's all part of progress. You need money to run a team. And then now you have on the broadcast side where, you know, and more power to them. It's a business. You understand whether it's the rooftops or now monetizing the broadcast end of it. It's changed.
Well, more and more teams are going to this model of having like a pay-per-view channel that features your favorite sports.
If you're
team.
The Yankees, I mean, there's only a couple that can get away with it, right? That can do it. You know,
it like, remains to be. We don't know yet because it isn't
is there
universal
a Dodger
yet.
Vision, you know?
I think the Dodgers do something like this. Yeah. I think I'm pretty sure they do.
But I know that, and I've seen it, whether it was Dave Hoekstra or maybe it was Eric Zorn, I've seen where people have said, hey, for whatever reason, the relationship with the Cubs and the team just mm-hmm. changed the way that people felt on the inside,
mm-hmm.
and that they've cut it just didn't feel as familiar,
right.
you know, where they're warranted their dollars for season tickets or whatever it was. Granted, they're relatively successful on the field. So I think there's a lot of intangibles in there. You know, as you change all of the things around it, is it still the same thing that you grew up and fell in love with?
It'll be the trick is making it feel that way, but somehow updating it, you know? And I know that sounds simplistic.
It's exactly what it is.
It's tricky. Baseball is a very nostalgic game because the way our mindsets are now, everybody's attention span is a little different, and baseball is a more pastoral game that really plays out over a 3-hour or sometimes longer stretch. So, it you know...
And who's with you when you're in, you know, in those seats or watching that game? I got to contend that you're not just watching the game that is there in front of you. You certainly are, but also like with you is, as you look around your history and other times you've spent in that particular ballpark,
yep,
times
yep.
you've had with friends and family. I think it all
sure.
comes to play, and as you kind of change, you know, the backdrop of it all, I think it does adjust the way that you feel.
No question. You know, I was thinking about on Steve's show. They were talking about magical games and magical moments that have happened over the stretch that happened on WGN television for the Cubs. And they mentioned a lot of the ones that you would imagine. The most notable one was the Kerry Wood game.
Well, I was thinking, okay, or the Bartman
Well, that one did not come up, although that was during
the
playoffs.
Game, yeah, never mind.
But whenever you talk about the Ryan Sandberg game, people remember it very, very fondly. This was the game where he just kept putting the Cubs back in the game over and every time he came in, he hit a key home run. That was not actually on WGN-TV. That was a game of the week, an ABC game of the week. So that one's a twisted one. But the one that's in my head, and it's not a single one, it's what happened on an almost daily basis when I was growing up with the Cubs on Channel 9 was the Cubs had a guy named, the director for Cubs baseball was a man named Arnie Rosenberg, I believe. And they would always say, they would show a woman in a hat.
Arnie Harris.
Right. You're right. So they would show, like, for no reason at all, the game would be going on. And it was the Cubs' very lean years where they weren't doing well.
A lot of demands on the color commentator.
There was a lot of downtime.
There's a guy in some shorts.
Right. There was that kind of thing. But they would always show, there would be a woman in a hat. And then they would say that it was Arnie's first hat shot of the day, you know, and then later on in the game, you were treated to the second hat shot and the third hat shot. And who doesn't enjoy a lady in a hat? I mean, that's just fun anyway. Yeah. But the fact that they would take time away from the broadcast to show you a woman in a hat and point it out, even as a kid, amused me. It's like, isn't there a baseball game going on? What are you doing?
Well, there wasn't a lot going on that was actually positive, right?
The Cubs are already down.
You see a great hat. Well, that changes your day. You know, a big floppy one.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Maybe like one of those safari helmets.
Yes, it does. But it's a very strange notion that after, I think in all of our lifetimes, the Cubs have been on Channel 9, on WGN television, to see that shift in the universe is a strange one. I'm sure life will go on. I'm positive of that, but it's just a strange moment.
But it's just another thing. You know, It's another thing that isn't the same.
Right.
It's another common touchstone that's kind of gone, and we'll see how it goes. You mentioned it's a trick, and it really is, because they're going to want to take a hold, because that is part of, I think, what's a very unique relationship that the Cubs have with their fans. Like, win or lose, you know, you still have a fan base. Doesn't always work like that in sports, and then you've got to be able to keep them connected.
Unquestionably.
Keep them as customers.
Yep.
While you do all the things you want to do to monetize those experiences and then upgrade them, too. They've done an amazing job with the park.
Let me tell you something quickly to look forward to. As they show Ernie Banks' 500th home run, a monumental home run as Ernie Banks hits the home run, you'll see those graphics, those 70s graphics,
because
everything was so primitive back then. So they just flashed the words, hey, hey, over and over as he's rounding the bases.
And that was like cutting edge.
It looks like, did you ever watch Between Two Ferns? And they used the old-time graphics? That's what it reminds me of when you see that. Hey, hey. So that'll be going on tonight. Good luck to the Cubs versus the Cardinals. We haven't won in a while, so let's see what happens. Thank you, Steve. Thanks to several texters, we were talking about how the Cubs are playing their last game on Channel 9. It's been going on for years and years and years. The Cubs were just on Channel 9, and all that's about to change.
It's anonymous. And I got to tell you, too, is any place that I go around the country, because for the longest time, Channel 9 was a superstation.
Right.
So it was on, you know, Atlanta, all around the country. And so people associated it. Not only did it grow the Cubs fan base and awareness base, but also for WGN and Channel 9, people, synonymous. Oh, yeah, right. Channel 9.
Yep. It's funny you say Atlanta, because I think the Braves were the only other team because of Ted Turner's network. I think the Cubs were first, and then Atlanta soon after, that the games would be seen nationally and not just in the home city. And it kind of made the Cubs America's team for the most part, you know?
People come in from Iowa because of of that, because, you know.
Yep. But I was talking about how for a long time on the Cubs games, when I was growing up anyway, during the course of a game, they would show you various what they called hat shots, and it was ladies wearing hats.
Right.
And you got to look at that, and several texters said,
well, even Will Ferrell, remember, look at the kid in the sombrero. Is that him, or is that the other guy who pretends to?
Oh, I'm not sure which one. Right. But several people said maybe it wasn't the hats that they were showing you, meaning, look, there's a beautiful lady on TV. The hat was an excuse to show the beautiful lady on TV.
The lady with the hat,
right?
That was certainly worthy of any amount of attention, may have been wearing a string bikini or something.
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. I talked about this. Wendy and I discussed this yesterday a little bit with Dean Richards, but it has now taken a new chapter in the story. On October the 4th, they're going to open up this movie called Joker, which I'm sure you've seen. If you watch TV at all, you've seen commercials for it already.
Yep.
You've got Joaquin Phoenix portraying the Joker that we all know from Batman, but it's kind of his origin story. And from what everybody says, I haven't seen, all I've seen is the 2-minute trailer. I've seen a couple of versions of the 2-minute trailer. It looks like it's going to be an interesting movie in several respects. It's going to be a very violent movie. We talked about this with Dean yesterday. They're now taking action. People in various cities, most notably in Colorado, where you had a horrible school shooting years ago, while showing a Batman movie, really taking precautions for this film that opens on October 4th. Listen to this. The Landmark Theater chain, which owns 52 theaters in 27 markets, including New York, Los Angeles, Dallas, and Washington, is banning anyone attending the movie from wearing masks, face paint, or even costumes for screenings of the much-awaited origin story of Batman's archenemy, Joker. The Joker policy is spelled out at the bottom of the page for advance ticket purchases on their website at various Landmark theaters. They say in the press release, "We want all of our guests to enjoy the Joker for the cinematic achievement that it is, but no masks, no painted faces, or costumes will be permitted into the theater. Thank you." It's an interesting step to take because it's not. It's I more than understand the concern that a movie could incite violence because it's mentioned over and over again whenever there's violence. Well, it's the world we live in. You've got violent video games. You've got violent rap songs. You've got violent movies. I understand the concern, but do you think that banning anybody from wearing a mask or a costume to a screening of a movie is going to do anything?
I don't know that it's. I think it's more an insurance policy. It's just the kind of thing that
saying, "Look, we did something."
You know,
we warned people.
Yeah, but you hate to have to make rules that you know apply all the way down to the lowest common denominator. So they're doing this. Well, and you look at some of the Star Wars movies that have happened. Where it's a big part of it. It's a kind of a communal thing. And I think Batman, the Joker, all those cinematic franchises have a similar fan base that are just excited. They'll go see all that stuff they want. They want to just dress up as their characters, and the Joker is one of those iconic characters. But it's sad that you have to prevent everybody from kind of showing their enthusiasm just on the off chance, and because of that history, right, that there'll be a crazy person who'll come in. Why don't you just have a metal detector or something, you know?
I'm sure they'll have, I'm hoping they'll have something like that.
It's just really sad. It's sad that it's gotten to that point.
That's come to this, yeah.
But you understand, especially just the things that have happened over the last, you know, period of time, and that an event like this is a target, and in a theater filled with people is an easy target. And there's a lot of, there's crazy people out there, you know?
I heard somebody say the other day on a cable show, they were talking about this exact same thing, and they said that the character he portrays, Joaquin Phoenix, even when he's, before he becomes the Joker, just the character that he plays in the opening stages of the movie, is the kind of person that they're most worried about, is that they found a character in him that's a loner, that doesn't get along with anyone in society, he's put down upon. They're saying that they're targeting the people who are exactly fitting the profile of anyone who could do something horrible. That's why they're more concerned about this one. Every week when movies come out, if you look at the 3 or 4 or 5 new releases, one or two of them have extra violence in it. It's part of movies, right? So I don't know what it is specifically about this movie that has got everybody in an uproar. I mentioned this to Dean yesterday. I do understand the people in Colorado, especially the parents who have really come out and said, we don't want this movie shown in our community. We've suffered enough. We don't need any extra aggravation. I understand that. And I think Warner Brothers needs to address that, you know, in a safe way, in a fair way, saying, we'll back off. We're okay. We get what you've gone through. We don't want to aggravate you. You're the last people we want to aggravate.
Well, I think in an area like that, you can take it a step further and maybe set outside of it and say it isn't necessarily because of that. It's more out of consideration that that the Joker, this character that we saw in a bunch of different incarnations, whether it's like the really goofy one from the 60s or Sid Caesar or any of those kind of things, or even these darker versions that we've seen in more recent films, that for them it means something different, right? That this is you know, you might as well have people dressed up like, you know, John Wayne Gacy or something like that, where it doesn't just mean that. It means that this is kind of the physical embodiment of the costume and the identity that was taken that killed so many people.
Right.
So I could say, like, hey, it's just not appropriate,
right,
you know, for us in our area,
because
it means something different. I mean, I could see that. I could see them not wanting to watch the movie. I mean, I get it. That's been tainted, that whole thing.
What are your thoughts on this? We're at 312-981-7200. What do they do to make this right? All they did was make a film. The film hasn't even been seen by most people yet. I mean, there's been advanced screenings for critics and things.
Well, now I'm going to take my you know, my regular concerned citizen, and isn't it bad that the world's come to this hat off?
Yeah.
The very nice hat, right, while I'm wearing my string bikini, Arnie Harris. And now you put on the marketing thing. If this is another way to generate interest,
mm-hmm.
another way to kind of add an additional dimension to the movie thing.
See, I don't think it is.
To say like, hey, this one's really dangerous, you know, or this one's going to make people want to, because they're trying to tell.
Do you think it is? I don't think it is.
I think that's a side effect benefit, whether it's intended or not. That is, hey, here we are talking about it.
I know, but all right, you know, I think this is one of the most inaccurate phrases in the American lexicon. There's no such thing as bad publicity. I so totally disagree with that phrase.
Remember Pop Rocks?
Yes.
You're supposed to explode?
Yeah.
People bought more Pop Rocks.
When they thought that Mikey from Life Cereal exploded from Pop Rocks?
Right. I mean, yeah. You don't want to end up like
these
Mikey.
These are dangerous candies. Let's get us some. But whenever you hear that phrase, there's no such thing as bad publicity, you can use this as an example because the last thing Warner Brothers wants to do is irritate its fan base. They don't want that. They just made a movie that they want everybody to come and enjoy. Yeah, it's got a violent element to it, but that's what the story is. You can't mask that, but you can't hide that part of it, right?
Well, but they're presenting it as, you know, as additional caution built into.
Right. So you think it'll sell more tickets?
I don't know. It's certainly raising awareness. Like, well, geez, what could be so bad about this? You know, because for those people out there, and this is how many rodeos has it been for the Joker? You know, we've mm-hmm. seen every kind of version mm-hmm. of Joker, and he's one of those great villains, I think, in the movie world. But what else can you do that's different? Certainly, right. Joaquin Phoenix, he's great at playing crazy people.
Yeah.
So he's going to come in. I think you're going to have a dark side. Like, what happened to him as a child that changed him into? Because the old Joker was more of your like typical criminal, like breaking out of the bank with the bags of money kind of thing.
The Cesar Romero version right. of the Joker was a very cartoony version of
constantly
the Joker.
Constantly robbing banks.
But if you look at like when Heath Ledger played him,
sure.
that was a guy that you when you watched him on screen, and he won an Academy Award. He was so convincing as being that very, very dark version of it. You knew this guy was I know he's a cartoon character. He's dangerous.
But so this is a story that's yet to be told in a situation where so many have already been written. And you get to see like, well, what happened? So like, what was his childhood like?
Right.
That changed him and put him
made
on
him
this
so
path.
Bad.
Right.
Yep.
And I think it's going to be interesting, you know, and I think whatever they can do to generate, you're going to have your fans, mm-hmm. you know, but then maybe there's something a little different here.
312-981-7200, your thoughts on this. They're taking great precaution to warn you that this Joker movie that's coming out on October 4th has a very dangerous element to it. Will this affect you? Are you still going to see it? We're at 312-981-7200. We'll take your calls and your texts in just a minute. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. It's Bill F. in for Bill F. It's Dane Neal in for Wendy Snyder. We're at 312-981-7200. Call us or text us there. We're talking about the Joker movie. It hasn't even opened yet. It opens October the 4th, but everybody's up in arms at the violence in this movie. It is an R-rated movie. Several texters have pointed out it's the first time that anything involving the Joker is R-rated, so it gives them a little more carte blanche to be a little bit more violent. Is that good or bad? I don't know. Let's go to the phone lines and talk to... Let's start out with John on line one. John, thanks for calling in. You're on WGN. What's up?
Hey, Bill, I enjoy your show.
Thank you, John.
My thought is this, Bill. We're all, you know, throwing up our hands when we have these mass shootings. And I believe, again, we have a violent culture, obviously, and I think we have to hold Hollywood accountable for what they put out there. I think, you know, the studies have shown that kids, I used to be a social worker with inner city kids, studies show that you know, the violence does impact their behavior. Obviously, not everyone, but maybe people on the edge, whatever you want to, you know, however we want to describe it. But I think we have to hold them accountable. It's going to be, you know, it's not any one thing, I think, in our culture. We can talk gun control and all that also. But, you know, we've got to hold, when there's gratuitous violence, when we're glorifying guys that just come shoot up a room and, you know, somehow that's cool, I don't think it is cool. And I think part of the solution is hold them accountable.
But how do you decide, John, with so many various elements at once, TV, movies, songs, video games, whatever, how do you decide what would be and what wouldn't be the line? How do you draw a line in all that?
I agree that's a tough question. But, you know, I remember the song, I don't know how long ago, it was Cop Killer or something
yeah.
like that. You know, a song so blatantly violent, going after, you know, maintain the peace and protect us. So to me, that's a clear cut. So some of them, I think, are much more clear cut than others. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think there are movies that I've enjoyed that had a certain element of violence in them. But, you know, yeah, that's a very tough line. I agree. But, you know, we've got to call them to account. I really think we have to.
John, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
And Bill, we had a text from the 630. And this is what you think about, too, is John Wick 3 came out. And for those people that haven't seen it, it is nonstop 100% from like moment one, to the other moment, just like a ballet of death.
Sure.
You know, jumping and kicking and stabbing and shooting and poking and the whole thing.
Yep.
Just happens, and the texter had mentioned how Keanu's been praised, and certainly it's a huge box office success. It's what people want. There's a theatrical point to it. It does. It seems as crazy as it sounds, the way that they do it, and he's just killing other hitmen.
Right.
So it isn't as though, you know, you feel for the people that are meeting the end. But the
there's
a lot of death in there.
But think about that. Is in a way, if they use that as a plot device, John Wick is killing bad people, so it's okay.
Yeah.
But this guy, the Joker's killing good people, so that's not okay. Just to see people shredded on a film is very upsetting to a lot of people,
and,
right?
And you brought it up, Bill. It's like, it's a slippery slope, right? Once you take the personal responsibility of, well, do you feel that this is something that you want to watch, you know, for whatever kind of theatrical value? And can you accept whatever the consequences of what it may be?
Right.
I don't want to say do to you, but it is going to inspire you to do things, and you have to have some personal responsibility. I think once you make Hollywood accountable,
mm-hmm.
I think they're going to be accountable to market forces, and mm-hmm. that's, otherwise, who, like you said, who decides?
Right.
Like, who says,
it's impossible to arbitrate that.
No.
It's impossible.
You can't.
Tim is on the line. Tim, welcome to WGN. What are your thoughts on this Joker movie?
Hey, Bill. Hey, Dane. Nice to hear you guys both. I know Wendy's normally there, but it's nice to have Dane filling in.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah. Yeah, my thoughts about this is I sort of look at it in terms of my kids. Like, okay, when I let my kids, they're fairly young, 11, 10, and 9. If I let them watch a movie that's fairly violent, I'd make it abundantly clear to them this is a movie. This is all pretend, and this is
sure.
not behavior. And so, you know, take it for entertainment value for what it's worth. They've seen the first two John Wick movies. And I say, you know, this doesn't really happen in real life. You know, this is just a movie, and it's
yeah.
supposed to get blood pumping. As far as the Joker, I can't be more excited to go see the film. And I don't care how violent it is or not, because in my world, it's a movie.
Yeah,
it's
right.
You know, and one thing I think they could do, if they haven't already, is in the beginning of the film, have Joaquin Phoenix come on before the film starts and say, you know, there's a lot of violence included in this movie, and we don't condone it in any way. This is, you know, we hope you can enjoy the show and the entertainment that it's going to provide for you. It's like at the beginning of The Greatest Showman, even though it's not violent, you had Hugh Jackman come on and say, you know, welcome to the theater. I hope you enjoy this entertainment. They did a similar thing with the young man who played Spider-Man. Like, they didn't want to ruin the trailer for his next movie, so he came on before. It's like, I have a new movie coming out, but I don't want to spoil it, so I'll give you the trailer at the end of it.
Hmm.
So just be frank with them. Be straight up and say, just this is what it's going to be. And don't, we're not saying behave like this.
Tim, have your kids expressed interest in seeing this movie? You said that the oldest is 13, right?
12, actually. 12? He'll be 12 next month.
11
yeah,
and
yeah.
9.
Has he mentioned that he wants to see this or not?
He hasn't mentioned. Yes, actually, he has. The oldest one has, because he's got his phone, so he watched the trailer.
Are you going to let him see it?
I don't know. I think that's one that I want to see before I let them watch it.
Yeah.
So even I have a line. There's certain things that are just, you know, it's R-rated for a reason, and no matter how much I want to protect my kids, you know, I want to make sure I'm making a good choice for them.
Right. Yeah, that's very responsible. Good.
But they're more excited about, they want to see John Wick 3. That's the one they really want to see.
And you know how violent that is.
Oh, I do. I went to the show, and I saw it, and I thought it was good fun. I had a blast.
Yeah.
But it is. It very is, violent.
Yeah, it's awesome, Tim. But you know, there's like 20 minutes straight of just nonstop like killing, and it's done. It's just so crazy for people who haven't seen the movie. It's done in the most entertaining way, Bill.
Yeah,
but it's
and
like,
were people cheering in the theater?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. Were it's crazy as it sounds. It's done in good fun. It's hard to convey that. I don't know about a 9-year-old. I think for that one, when we saw it, we sent Vivi to watch. She's 8 to watch Secret Life of Pets 2, which mm-hmm. has less killing,
a little safer. Yeah, Tim, thanks so much for the phone call.
All right, thanks, Bill.
Have a good weekend. Take care.
So what do you think, Bill? Do you think like a, some sort of disclaimer in the front? I think if there is a movie where, let's say, there's animals being, you know, where you want to convey that no animals were hurt with this, our real stance on this is we love and protect the, you know, the you know, animal community or whatever. But I think, isn't it a given that you need Joaquin Phoenix to come out and say, like, hey, it's not cool to kill people?
Remember, kids, what you're about to see is just a movie. Please don't go out and kill anybody.
Right. I mean... Maybe not.
The one that stands out, and I know I'm going back a bunch of years for this, so please bear with me. I know this is an old reference. There was a movie years and years and years ago called The Bad Seed. And in The Bad Seed, Patty McCormick plays this girl who kills a classmate. She's a child, a sweet, adorable child who kills a classmate.
Is that an after-school special?
Yeah, it was an ABC after-school special. So, no, it was a theatrical release. So it was so disturbing to people. But keep in mind, this was made in the 50s, and she's, you know, she's got this cherubic face, and she looks like America's sweetheart. She's just this little schoolgirl. The idea that this kid could do something so violent. Now, when you see the movie, when you see The Bad Seed, you don't see that scene. It's just talked about in the movie, and the aftermath is what the movie's about. But it was so disturbing to audiences that they had to add a disclaimer to the movie where she came out, and they said, look, she... just a kid playing.
She's okay.
Everything. Nobody got hurt. Everybody's good. Believe us. We wouldn't have a kid kill another kid. That didn't happen. It was just a movie. That's it. But when you see that now, you just think to yourself, oh, man, were people really that ill-informed back then that they thought that any of that could have really happened?
I mean, okay. So I think there's, you know, people have become insensitive or just used to. You remember the Alfred Hitchcock movie with Psycho, when that no one will take a shower again,
right?
They never showed actual stabbing. They showed some, it was all in black and white,
sure,
right? But just the idea that it could happen was so disturbing to people. And some of the scariest movies of all time are the ones that just imply,
right,
you know, the most terrible thing you can imagine.
So true.
But
so
you
true.
Wonder if yeah, like if we become you know, just I don't know,
yeah,
insensitive.
Coming up, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Thank you so much for all the great phone calls and texts. We've got tons and tons of texts from people expressing their opinion about the Joker movie, and a lot of fans of the movie The Bad Seed. It's a very strange, obscure movie. I'm so glad that so many people saw it and enjoyed it. It's news time right now. Oh, Alexander Zelbin coming up right after the news. Chicago Stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. If you're a smart speaker user, all you have to do is say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It's news time right now. It's sponsored by the Lindemann Chimney and Fireplace people. Here with the news, Steve Bertrand.
I like it.
Alex, I picture you very much in a James Bond way, just walking across the screen, holding a squirt gun for some reason, not a regular gun, but a squirt gun, mm-hmm, and just turning toward the camera during the bop, bop, bop part.
I see him kind of rolling over the hood of a car.
Oh, yeah,
Starsky
I could see that.
And Hutch style.
I could see that.
Kool-Aid, shaken, not stirred.
Delicious. Alexander Zelbin joins us right now. Alexander, of course, the managing editor of Decider.com. We talked to him on Fridays to find out what's going on in the world of television. Let's rewind a couple of days to the Emmy Awards. I'm curious, Alex, mm-hmm, you tell me. I knew that most of the categories were dominated by the non-networks, by not, mm-hmm, CBS, by not ABC, by not NBC, but it's really jarring when you see it wall-to-wall-to-wall where they have almost no representation in television's best. Are they worried about this or not?
I don't know how much they're worried, just because, frankly, nobody watched the Emmys. No. In terms of, you know, nobody tuned in for it. It was the lowest rated Emmys ever. And part of that could be pointed to, you don't have these network shows. Even as their viewership has eroded, they're still usually the biggest game in town. But you're not going to see like an NCIS or anything like that necessarily nominated for a ton of Emmys and come out. And that's the thing that potentially people would watch and they tune in for. You have amazing shows. As they said at the beginning of the Emmys, TV has never been better, and that's absolutely true. But there's also never been more TV, and so you have more better TV, but less people watching each individual show. So it's very fractured that way. So in terms of the networks, I don't think they're necessarily scared, because the Emmys mean a lot less than they did before.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at the same time, it's a good thing for the streaming services. You look at something like Prime Video that very much has struggled with its identity as a network, as a streaming service, and it killed it at the Emmys through Fleabag and everything else that they won for, all the Phoebe Waller-Bridge stuff. that was a huge night for them, and that basically was them being able to say, hey, we're here, and we have award-winning shows just like everybody else.
All right, on that topic, there were several, and this happens every year during the Emmys, there's a couple of shows that are mentioned, and sometimes they get multiple nominations for shows, and I turn to my wife and I say, I've never even heard of that. I don't know who that is. I don't know what that is. Give us one or two that were mentioned during the Emmys that might have been nominated or won that really people should go back and find and watch. Well, give us an example or two.
Well, Fleabag is definitely one of those, which I think basically nobody really watched, or at least more people watched and were talking about in the second season. But it is a absolutely fantastic show. It's a quick, short binge. And Phoebe Waller-Bridge, off of that, got a huge deal with Amazon. I believe it's $20 million a year to develop shows with them. So that's something you should definitely check out. Another one that I'll mention, nobody really watches stuff on FX. It's not a very watched network, but they always do good quality work. Billy Porter won for Pose there, which was pretty groundbreaking. I'm forgetting the exact stat, but I believe he's the first out gay actor to win the Best the Lead Actor Award. That show is stunning as well. It's a great drama. It's well-filmed. Billy Porter is amazing in it. So that's one you should definitely check out. And then there's The Act, which was actually a big hit for Hulu, starring Patricia Arquette and Joey King. But I think unless you knew about it, it's a true crime drama. It's very salacious. The story is over the top, and I won't spoil any of it here. But Patricia Arquette, of course, fantastic. Joey King, fantastic. So that's one you can check out on Hulu as well.
That's called The Act. Right?
The Act, yes.
All right, I'll find... Yeah, that's one of the ones I'm referring to, that as they're mentioning the nominees, we look at each other, my wife and I, and we just go, where did that come from? Never heard of that. Love the people in it, but never heard of it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, one of the other problems, and this sounds ridiculous when I say it out loud, but it's the amount of words. There's so many shows coming out, they're kind of running out of words for titles, and they all sound the same.
Right.
So if you don't know what The Act is, you'd be like, oh, it's about actors, but that's not actually what it's about at all.
Right. So what do they do when the viewership is that low? There was a time where the Emmys and the Oscars really meant something, and for some reason that's slipping away. Is there a way to fix that, or are you just given to the fact that times have changed?
I think that's part of it. I think they need to find a new way to broadcast it. You know, if they want to put Band-Aid on the wound, instead of broadcasting it on one network, put it on every network. Say, hey, this is the Emmy show. This is the most important thing on TV right now. We're going to broadcast it everywhere. Another suggestion that I've seen a lot is just put it online, just put it on YouTube, you know, because more people are going to stream it that way. But I don't think they're going to get the ad revenue and be able to support the show in the same way that way. But ultimately, the way that people are consuming the shows, they've gotten smarter to the fact that it's 3+ hours long. Not a lot happens. Most of it is boring. Like you were saying, most of the shows nobody's people watched before.
Right.
And if you really want to see the best moments, you can just check it out on Twitter. And that's where you're going to get the funniest jokes. That's where you're going to get the best bit.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a really great kind of enticing pitch for the advertiser. It's going to be boring. It's going to be long.
We know
and boring.
We know.
So I wanted to ask you, too, is, you know, is sort of to make a correlation to the craft beer world, right? So you get all these craft breweries and then the big brewers buy up the craft brewers. Is it the kind of thing, or maybe are these independent networks as big as they are, things like Amazon, you know, Netflix, are they big enough to maybe where they can't be absorbed by the networks? Or is there some thought that maybe some of those major networks just might buy them and have them as property? You know, like Google buys things and just kind of combine forces.
Tricky because you have bigger companies owning these networks. Like you have NBC, isn't just NBC, it's NBC Universal, and that's much part of a much bigger company. CBS is now part of CBS Viacom. They also own a stake in the CW. Fox, of course, is part of the Fox Corporation, even though that's bifurcated, part of it going over to Disney. So that makes it tricky. If anything, a real huge paradigm shift would be one of these streamers actually buying a broadcast network.
Wow.
That would be something that would be game-changing in a very big way, because ultimately, broadcast right now is for a much older audience. Streaming is usually for a younger audience. Netflix bridges the gap, I would say, because everybody has Netflix on everything. But you could see Prime Video is owned by Amazon. They have billions of dollars. If they suddenly decided, you know what, we want the CW, we're going to buy it from CBS, and Warner Brothers were going to take it off your hands and turn it into our network, that would really change things in a big way.
Alex, let's take a look at some of the shows coming on this week. It's the last season for The Good Place, one of the best comedies on TV. It starts tonight, right? The new season starts tonight?
It actually was on last night on NBC.
Oh, it was.
It's going to be every Thursday for the next couple of weeks, and then I believe, as annoyingly, but is going to take a short break before it finishes up the season like it did last year.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen the first couple of episodes. It's as hilarious as always. It's as smartly written and acted. They did a nice thing in last night's episode where you absolutely should go back and rewatch or watch the entire show. But if you never did, they reintroduce you to the situation, reintroduce you to the characters, and it's very new viewer friendly. So if you've heard things about the show and are curious to check it out, again, probably start from the beginning, but last night's episode is a good way of jumping right in.
CBS has a supernatural show on called Evil. That's just premiering this week. What do you know about Evil?
The TV show Evil. Last night at 10 p.m. What do I know about Evil? Well,
in general,
not in general, but the TV show Evil. I'm sorry.
I love this show, actually. I'm not a big procedural guy. But this is a supernatural procedural from the Kings who created The Good Wife and The Good Fight. And it stars Mike Coulter from Luke Cage, Katya Herbers, who was on Westworld, and Asaf Manvi, who was on The Daily Show for a while. Mike Coulter is a priest in training who is investigating things that maybe could be exorcisms or maybe could be miracles, and he recruits two skeptics to go along with him. So it's a very X-Files setup. But it's very smartly written. It's smartly acted. Again, I've seen the first couple of episodes of it, and it only gets better every week. But it's also one of the creepiest shows I've ever seen.
Oh,
and
nice.
There are moments in the fourth episode in particular that, just to prep you guys for a month down the road, gave me nightmares after I saw it. So if you're looking for a show like that, it's a good, fun, scary time.
You had me at it gets better every week. I love shows that build that way. That's very encouraging.
Yeah.
Alexander Zelbin's our guest. He's the managing editor over at Decider.com. We'll take a quick break and discuss more television with him. We're at 312-981-7200 if you'd like to jump in. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. Alexander Zelbin is here from Decider.com. Great website if you love entertainment or television. Alexander, I was watching This Is Us the other day, and I noticed in the press release for This Is Us that they are adding a famous director to the cast of This Is Us. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't know about this, actually.
M. Night Shyamalan is going to play a reoccurring role on This Is Us. What do you make of that?
Well, that's a twist.
Yeah.
It's a big twist.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he is, let's be honest, not the best actor.
You take that back.
Okay.
You don't think he's the greatest actor?
All right. He's the best actor.
All right, thank you.
It's appropriate for the show, right? They just had a really huge twist right at the beginning of the season,
yes,
as they often want to do. So bringing him in is very on the nose, but it makes a lot of sense for the show.
I'm anxious to see what they have him do. He wasn't in that first episode, but I have to think it's coming up pretty quick, so I'm anxious.
Yeah.
The Politician, this is a new Ryan Murphy series on Netflix. Tell us what we need to know.
Yeah, every episode of it is on Netflix as of today. This is actually producer Ryan Murphy's first Netflix show, part of a huge overall deal that he has with the streaming service. So there's certainly a lot of eyes on it. It stars Ben Platt, who is probably best known from Dear Evan Hansen on Broadway, though he's done a couple of other projects since. He was also in the Pitch Perfect films, so you might know him from there. He plays the perfect political candidate. He dreams of being president someday, and every season of the show is going to follow him during an election as he moves on his way to working towards become president. This one is set in high school. So if you saw the movie Election, it's very like that. It's very satirical. Ben Platt does sing several times in it. Gwyneth Paltrow plays his mom. There's a lot of other, oh yeah, I know that person throughout the show. I didn't love it. A lot of critics didn't love it, but it's gorgeously filmed. The performances are excellent throughout. And if nothing, even though I was kind of iffy about the whole season, the last episode made me very excited to see season two. There's a couple of cameos I won't spoil there. So Check it out if you're interested, particularly if you're interested in a political satire right now.
It's one thing to go into politics as a vocation or as a public servant. Do they try to, through the episodes, kind of weave in, you know, kind of current events or, you know, things that are happening or that people are dealing with on the political side into some of the episodes, whether it's like the...
It is very removed from reality. If anything, if you watch Glee, which was one of Ryan Murphy's first shows, it's very close to that, where it's on the nose, it's blunt in terms of its satire. It's not necessarily tied into anything that's going on right now, even as it mentions issues. It's more equal opportunity in terms of making fun of everybody, from people who are super woke to people who are super rich to everything in between.
It sounds good. I know you gave it a mixed review, but I'm interested. Ryan Murphy has quickly become one of the most important people in television, hasn't he, Alexander?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple of super producers out there. Ryan Murphy is one of them. Greg Berlanti is another. Shonda Rhimes is another. And services like Warner Brothers and Netflix have been snapping them up. And Ryan Murphy, in particular, what he's figured out very well is collaborators to work with. Jessica Lange is in The Politician. She has worked with him time and time again on various shows. Yeah. And she is fantastic, works well with him, and he's going to continue to bring people like that to Netflix, which is good for everybody.
It's the end of the road for Transparent. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
50-50, I would say. So there was a bit of a flap, which you might remember, with Jeffrey Tambor.
Yep.
He was accused of harassing people on several sets, including Arrested Development, as well as Transparent. They made the decision to leave him out of the fifth and final season, and you can probably put the word season in quotes, because it's essentially an extended movie-length episode that partially is musical, and it deals with the death of his character, Maura, who was one of the first transgender characters on TV. So our reviewer, Claire Spellberg, who saw it, liked the show at first, was very mixed on the finale, felt like ultimately the time for the show has passed, if anything. But if you are a fan of the show, it's not a big investment. Again, it's only about an hour and a half, and at least you can see how everything with the Pfefferman family wraps up.
I'm always curious as to the decision to make an episode, especially a last episode of a show, a musical episode. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. What are your thoughts?
I'm a huge fan of musical episodes. I'm a total sucker for them. I think I understand the impetus here because Transparent has always been very heightened. It's gone into dream sequences. It's gone into fantasy sequences. So that makes sense. The bad part, again, our reviewer said, is that the music is not very good. So that's the thing that certainly is going to knock down a musical episode in anybody's mind.
So when Making a Murderer does a musical episode, you're going to watch that?
100%. I'm very excited to see
it's going
to
be fun.
The dance, then reveal facts.
Absolutely.
All with Milwaukee accents.
Yeah, that's going to be great. Saturday Night Live is coming back. Now, here's a quick question. It's going to be on tomorrow night. Woody Harrelson's the host, Billie Eilish, the musical guest. Will there be any mention at all of the Shane Gillis episode, or will they do everything they can to put that behind them? What do you think?
I think they've got to, right? During Weekend Update,
I think so.
There has to be some sort of joke about that. You know, certainly it was a very uncomfortable thing for Saturday Night Live to have to deal with, at the very least. But they always take on those things head on. You know, if they're not going to bring on Shane Gillis, which I certainly hope they don't do, they're going to have Michael Che or Colin Jost call it out right on Weekend Update, I would bet.
It's too big to ignore, right? They were in the news. You have to address it, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. And particularly with new cast members coming on, I hope they don't put them in an uncomfortable situation. But it's even the sort of thing that you deal with in Woody Harrelson's monologue, where he could say something like, I'm very excited to meet all the new cast members, like Shane Gillis, and then somebody comes out and whispers to
him. Right. I don't remember the names of the two cast members, but the girl who's been added to the show, one of the featured players, I've watched her demo tape. It's online, and she does 12 characters. Impressions of celebrities, and some of them are pretty obscure, but some of them are fantastic. She does a really good job with the celebrity impressions. I don't know that much about her other than that, but that was a really good addition.
Yeah, Chloe Fineman is their name. She is very funny. Also, Bowen Yang, who's the other new addition, he was a writer on the show for a while. He is hilarious as well, so I'm very excited to see him on screen.
Good. Two very, very good additions. I have to ask you one more thing, and I don't know, this isn't fair because I don't know if you have any knowledge of this at all, but I just saw Stephen King endorsing a show that's on Netflix. It's a foreign series called Marianne, and it's about witches. Do you know anything about it at all?
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to check it out myself, but our reviewers here loved it. They said it's very wicked, it's very arch, it's very funny, it's also very scary at the same time. It's about a horror writer who discovers an evil spirit is plaguing her dreams, and it starts to come into the real world. Everybody I've talked to has a blast watching that series, and it's definitely on my queue to check out sometime soon.
It's called Marianne, and like I said, Stephen King just went on and on about how great and creepy and scary it is. A very quick question. We have a bunch of questions. Let me just get one in. Bill is online, too. Bill, go ahead. It's Alexander Zalbin from Decider.com. What's your question?
My question, I have like two questions. One, is there a new season of Ozarks coming, and when? And Narcos in Mexico. How about that one, too?
Thanks for your questions. Both of them are coming back. We don't know when on either of them at this point. Ozark is a big question mark because it was renewed back on October 10th, 2018, and we haven't heard anything about it, and we know that they've already filmed the new season. So I would be surprised if it doesn't come out before the end of this year. As for Narcos, that also is going to be coming back. It's one of the biggest hits for Netflix, so they're going to milk it for as long as they possibly can. Again, not 100% sure when a new season is going to come back, but it definitely has been renewed for a second one.
Bill, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. Alexander, always fun to talk to you. Have a great weekend, and we'll check in with you a week from today, okay?
All right, you too. Thanks so much for chatting.
Very good. All right, that's Alexander Zalbin, like I said, from Decider.com. We will take a quick break, and then we'll get you some news. More show ahead. It's Bill and Dana for Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Dave Schwann. It's Bill Leff. It's Dane Neal. Dana sitting in for Wendy. Wendy had a scheduled day off. I always say scheduled day off. I don't know why I throw that in, but it was.
It's not an out of the blue.
Right.
You know, there's no reason.
Cause for concern. It was a scheduled day off.
Yeah, stuff she scheduled.
Right. But even when it isn't a scheduled day off, I will still say that it's a scheduled day off because I don't want I don't want the city panicking.
Okay, so I think you've broken the trust level with the listeners. They're like, is it really?
Right. What if I
this
say.
This time, it really
if
it, was.
If it isn't, I will say it's a scheduled day off, but I'll blink a lot. So you have to really move your ear toward, you know, your speaker to hear it. But I'll go, yeah, Wendy, everything's fine. It's a scheduled day off. Blink, 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 blink. You'll hear it.
For the listeners, Bill is one of the louder blinkers in the world, right?
It's nice of you to say, Dane. Yeah. I need to. I know this is very selfish, but it needs to be mentioned. We've lost a longtime listener, a lady named Lynn Malnikoff, who is such a nice lady. And I say that I never actually got the pleasure of meeting Lynn Malnikoff, but I received over the years several notes from her and several emails. She listened to the station morning, noon, and night. We lost her the other morning. Very, very sad. When I took over the nighttime show several years ago from Steve and Johnny, I had been doing the show maybe 3 or 4 months, and I got a note from Lynn saying, and this was so heartfelt and wonderful, she said, when you took this job, I was very mad at you because you took two of my friends away. And I was a radio listener long before I was on radio, so I understood that. We've all been in a situation where you got used to a show at a certain time of the day or night, and then they make a change, and you say to yourself, oh, don't do that. I like that girl. Don't take them away. So I'm sure Lynn wasn't the only one who felt that way, and I got other notes saying the same thing. But Lynn said, I was so upset when they put you in place of Steve and Johnny, and I was mad at you, and I didn't want to listen. And then every once in a while, I'd listen for 5 minutes or 10 minutes,
okay,
and I started listening.
Bill,
yeah,
guy's okay.
It's not that bad, right? So she said, and then after a while, I was very happy that you were working there, and you know, it was a nice introductory letter from her. And we exchanged notes from time to time. You know, there'd be a segment that she liked and wanted to do more of or something, or she'd ask a question. This is a strange coincidence, but I told her a story. I said, years and years ago, you know, as a side note, I'm a toy collector. I'm a toy fanatic. I said, there used to be a store. There was a department store called Malnikoff's that sold closeouts. So if you had some item...
Like Big Lots.
Yeah.
You know, where you
like
never know what you'll find, but it'll be a great.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So my parents would shop at this place, Malnikoff's, and they got me a lot of the toys when I was a kid that started me with my toy collection. And I said, I know it's a million to one shot, but that the name was the same as your name. is there any connection? And she sent me a note back saying, oh my God, that was my dad's store for years and years. It's been closed forever.
Wow.
But that was my dad's department store, Malnikoff. So, yes. So I said, well, your dad's the reason I have this weird affliction to loving toys so much, because they used to buy all the toys at your dad's store. So over the years, I got so many nice letters from her, very complimentary letters. And I, like I said, I never got the pleasure of meeting Lynn Malnikoff, but she was always so pleasant. And like I said, a longtime listener to the station, listened all the time. So, you know, my heartfelt sadness for her loss to the family and friends of hers.
Wow. Well, you know, it's high praise, right, to have, to be able to kind of make that transition from a beloved, you know, radio team and to kind of be embraced by that, by someone who really does love the station and listen on a regular basis, and then to have that connection. But that's the kind of connection that happens. You know, there's a lot of people out there listening, and a lot of them have that same affinity for WGN and those stories. And it's great that you got to, because a lot of that stuff happens and you never get to even know.
Right. Well, you know, I always think of her and similar listeners like Lynn. When, you know, when we did this Walk of Fame induction ceremony a couple of weeks ago, you heard several mentions to the fact that it's a very familial relationship between the people on air here and the people who are listening.
For sure.
More so, I think, than any other radio station anywhere.
Yep.
I've worked at other radio stations, and there's always an element of that, but not like it is here. But Lynn was a great example. Just what she would write in her notes to me were as if she knew those people, and she didn't. She only knew them from listening, but it kind of brought me back to the reason I got into this, you know, because even though there's the wall of space between us and anybody listening, if the job is done properly, that space is erased. You're feeling like you're listening or you're talking to people that you already kind of know, and she was the embodiment of that, you know?
It shows those the unique relationships that that this station has, you know, long-standing, long-time, generations of people and families, and it's cool to have that kind of, you know, where you get to, they get to appreciate what it is that you do, and you get to appreciate them as well.
That's it. That's what it comes down to. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then we have more to discuss, so stick around. If you want to jump in, you easily can. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill, and it's staying in for Wendy on WGN. Bill F., it's Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy. A scheduled day off. Did I mention that, Dane? It's a scheduled day off for Wendy. No need to panic. She'll be back on Monday.
You should have expected this.
Yep. It was on the schedule.
Right.
And if you ever want to see the schedule, just come on up. It's posted.
In plain sight.
It's right there for everybody to see. Dane, no matter what your job is, and you already know this, you're a professional.
Sure.
I mean, no matter what your job is, you have to have a plan B. You have to have a fallback. You have to have a second career.
Safety net.
A safety net.
Or a waiver form.
Or,
something.
Yes. You have to have something just in case whatever your job is falls apart on you. And I have one that could work very well for you or for some listener.
If it's Park Ranger, Bill, you've been reading my mind.
Are you considering being a Park
that
Ranger?
That one with nature?
Oh, wouldn't that be
fun?
Well,
I mean, it's what...
Like Ranger Smith on that Yogi Bear show.
I want to break them all down. I want to be like any other ranger. I want to be out there.
A new breed of ranger?
Well, I mean, I got to give it some thought. You don't want to really invest in your backup plan.
You make a great ranger. You seriously make a fantastic ranger.
I appreciate that.
Domino's Pizza wants to help with your plan B. They've got a job that might be right for you. Listen to this, Dane, would you? They say that if you love what you do, you will never work a day in your life. That's kind of true, I guess.
Sure.
Right? But what if you really love what you do? Like, say your job is to eat garlic bread all day long. Wouldn't that be a fun job, to eat garlic bread all day long?
I go back to my experience with ramen noodles in college, and I had it where I loved them. I'm like, I can't believe they're only 19 cents. I'm just going to eat these all day. And
sure.
There came a day when the thing I loved became less loved.
Mm.
Yeah.
I hate to hear
so
this.
So even garlic bread is as
don't
good as
mention
that
this. If you go in for a job interview with Domino's, don't the part you just told me, leave that part out.
Unending relationship with
garlic
bread.
That part. Domino's Pizza in Australia, not the one here in the U.S., but the Australian Domino's Pizza.
Down under Domino's.
Right. Is offering one person the chance to find its new chief garlic bread taste tester. Wouldn't that look good on a resume? The job, which has its own LinkedIn listing, lays out the duties of a garlic bread taster and that they're just as fun as you would assume. Because it's got to be, I mean, it's got to be a combination of hard work, but some fun, right? You would hope.
Right? Is this like a limited time engagement? Because you think once you dial it in, mm-hmm. and you know you've got the crack staff and mm-hmm. lab coats at Domino's kind of working on the research and development, once you finally honed your garlic bread...
Would be the trick, is to say to them...
Or is he constantly tasting each one, and then it's like, this has been pre-tasted right. by
I can
Bob
tell by the chew marks in this garlic bread, somebody's tasted this. It says, you would spend 7.5 hours a day eating garlic bread and other Domino's products, and then give your honest opinion about each of those products. That doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility. You could do something like that, right? If you're wondering if you're qualified, they are pretty clear about the skills that you will need for this job.
Got tongue...
You do need a tongue, right? A tongue is high among the job qualifications. First of all, you will need to be, what they say, a little bit crunchy, but mostly warm and soft on the inside. Not unlike their product, Dane.
Yeah.
Very similar to their product. You may not be a vampire. See, now when you put stuff like that in there, it delegitimizes it.
Well, I think you're just opening yourself up for criticism. You're the vampire right. community can say, yeah, right. oh, I get it, right? Because traditionally...
Right.
And I think that would be, what's the word, Bill? A stereotype.
It is a stereotype.
It's probably a lot of garlic-loving vampires that are offended.
Right.
Right
this
now.
Is if I'm a vampire and I read this, I go, this is 2019.
Yeah, that was back in the old...
This is 1,000 years ago, not today. You must be comfortable giving your honest food feedback. I know you're that. I've heard you do that with food on the show.
Like, Domino's, this is terrible.
You would say that
to them? You gotta be able to, well, I mean, if you needed to.
Yeah, to be honest, right?
Could be like, this is great.
This is the part now, it says, where there's the catch. There's always a catch. In this case, there are a few catches. It's obviously at a location in Australia, so that'd be a long commute for you. You live in the western suburbs.
Can't Skype in for that.
That's a long commute every day. So if you don't live in Australia, you are out of luck, it says, since they will only pay for one domestic flight once you're there.
What else That's do you odd. Need once you get there?
Yeah, you're there, right. But I know you'd miss your family after a while.
Who's to say?
No, maybe not. All right, that's fair. That's true. I'm sorry.
FaceTime.
I jumped to conclusions, didn't I? I apologize, Dane.
But Dad, where are you? I'm like garlic bread, kids.
All right, now here's another catch, Dane. Now it starts to get a little watered down. It is not a full-time job. Ugh. I know. I'm with you. It's not even close, it says, to being a full-time job. It's actually only for 1 7.5-hour day. That's it. That's not worth your effort to go all the way to Australia.
What's the benefit package?
Strangely, it does not mention the benefit package.
It's like
I was sure there'd
52
be 52
weeks, just about.
No,
a vacation.
Doesn't mention it. But on the other side, it does include a pizza lunch. And a very cool spot on your resume forever. Mm. You're not impressed by that?
What is the compensation?
Plus,
is it just free?
Oh, your timing is perfect on that. Plus, you will be paid $30 an hour for the 7.5 hours.
Okay.
So you walk away with almost $250 Australian.
What's the
exchange
rate?
I don't have my conversion. You know how every time we work together, I bring in my Australian conversion money chart?
Right, whatever it is.
The one day I need it.
Well, today it's $92, right? So that's what it is.
No, there's some days where you make out like a bandit.
Sure. You got to pick your day. Do you get to pick the day or do they choose a day?
Oh, no. No. That's their call. If you're still interested, you can complete a survey and tell Domino's in 200 words... why you should have the job. You can also make a 30-second video as to why you should have the job. Good luck, it says. You don't sound as encouraged as you did at the beginning of it.
Well, you said, we were talking about dream job, going on, moving, amazing. It seems like it's a one-day kind of promotional.
All the glory.
I'm not going to use the word stunt, but it just seems like it. And
that's stunt-like. Let's not call this a stunt, but let's say it's stunt-like.
Stunt-esque.
It is.
If you are next door, If you are next door to wherever this is taking place, mm-hmm. and for one day you could schedule, just mm-hmm. as Wendy would maybe schedule a day, to mm-hmm. go over there, mm-hmm. spend 7 hours for $200, give or take, right, dollars, and eat garlic bread, providing you're okay with that, and I guess not a vampire.
Right, as they pointed out.
This could work, for a day, but this is not like your next career move.
This
but it says resume, so it implies that this will launch you into maybe... Mm-hmm. Because think about this. If you, Domino's, regardless of how you feel specifically about it, mm-hmm. a prominent brand, an iconic brand in the pizza world with
forever.
A great backstory, sure.
Yeah.
And if you're good enough for Domino's,
yes.
perhaps you can get a gig going day to day, maybe 3 days a week, at pizza places and garlic bread places around the world.
I would imagine, though, like the
special
Domino's,
forces of food kind of thing.
Wouldn't they make you sign some sort of a non-compete clause so that you couldn't go to any other, you know, competitor and go, hey, I've been doing this for Domino's. They don't need me anymore, but you know how good my taste buds are.
I'm the famous taste. If I say right. It's good.
It must be good.
Boom.
Right.
You know, this is gold, right?
I'm a taster.
I don't know. I guess you're probably going to sign a bunch of things. Everything's a negotiation, but are they going to use you in commercials? Like this
doesn't say they are. Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
You, all they the just glory, really need your help?
All the glory in 7 hours, okay. And then you're out of luck.
Well, that's the future that I see, you know, for whoever this is mm-hmm. that if you can parlay mm-hmm. you know, this experience, this resume line, into a career as a famous and well-compensated garlic bread tester,
but to
I think you're good.
To be fair, there are plenty
Take it from me.
Right, right. There are plenty of food companies that do employ various tasters, and they keep them on full time. It's not a one and done. You're always in a room tasting new product.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it'd be more fun to be like the... Like, hey, we're having Jerry the Taster is coming in. Oh, not Jerry, the real one. You know, like, remember the San Diego Chicken?
Right.
Like, you know, he kind of carved out a niche. Yes. And, see, he wasn't just stuck. He was San Diego. But then he was kind of universal. He was everywhere.
Yeah.
He's a celebrity.
So do the same thing.
Yeah.
You started to tell me that Domino's had some deal going where, if I'm wrong, correct me immediately.
You're wrong.
You could buy pizza insurance from
Domino's?
Well,
okay. So, and this is maybe in the long line of ideas that Domino's has, additional ways to engage the fan base, the mm-hmm. customer base, and also solve some problems, right? So I'm pretty sure that I saw commercials where they implied that, you know, you're going to pick up Domino's mm-hmm. and then you're driving it home and you inevitably hit a pothole.
Something could happen.
And something happens to your pizza. So not only do you hit this pothole, but it's such a big pothole that your pizza launches into the air and somehow becomes disheveled within the box, right? And is therefore, I guess, inedible or whatever.
Oh, maybe.
Right? So this happens on a regular basis. And so what do you think? You need to create an insurance program to support it. So they created, like, Domino's, if your pizza gets messed up inside the box, you're like, you have Domino's. And so the person, of course, is upset. Like, oh my gosh, my pizza.
Yeah.
So you bring it back to Domino's, and then they replace it.
No questions asked?
Well, I think there's probably questions. Have
you ever driven before? Why? Right. Why did this happen?
There's probably questions, but in my mind, I'm thinking I've been ordering and eating and driving around with pizza for a long time.
The better part of your life.
And it's never happened. It's not like, oh, here's a pothole. It's ruined the pizza again.
What do they charge for the pizza insurance?
I'd have to look into it. 312-917-7200. If people have utilized this valuable tool,
right,
you know, to safeguard your pizza. But I don't know if it's something extra that you pay or if it's that they're just so you know.
We've got this
in
place
happens,
if you need it.
Yeah, if this pothole situation.
And it's only...
I think they even fill the pothole, too. It sounds crazy. You think you need a permit from local ordinance for that.
Really? Yeah.
I think I saw them with a... I don't know. Maybe I dreamed it. But...
that part may have been the dream part. Yeah, yeah, right. The rest is real. But this only works if you go and pick up the pizza and then something bad happens on your way home with the pizza.
It's an excellent point. So you're saying if the delivery guy happens to hit the inevitable pothole,
that's where shows you would up, think that would...
Well, but don't you think there's some sort of teachable moment with the delivery guy? Like, geez, I can't deliver this. Maybe I'll go back and get another one. Like if he dropped it in your front yard or something.
But you've had at some point, you've ordered a pizza and then when you've opened it up, it's a catastrophe, right? That's happened at some
point. Yeah. I mean,
That's where the insurance should be.
Who decides what the catastrophe? There's got to be some sort of arbiter, some sort of...
Right.
Okay, I'm going to have to plug in with my... You
some
know.
Pizza Supreme Court.
So what does it look like? Send me a picture.
Yeah.
They have an adjuster come out. He looks at it. He decides the value. Well, there's only four pieces that are kind of messed up.
Right. So it's okay. We'll take a quick break. We'll turn things over to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Dane and I are going to the stream. Join us there or stick around here. It's WGN.